Hare Krishna. So we continue with our discussion of the sixth chapter. So we are right now getting into the heart of this chapter. And Krishna is going to talk about the details of the process of sadhana. So till now, Krishna has talked about the Aruksha and Aruda stage. And then in the previous verses, he has described about how when a person comes to the Aruda stage or is nearing the Aruda stage, and a person has at least some basic level of control over the mind, advanced level of control over the mind, where one can see equal vision, with equal vision towards things and people. So such a person can renounce the world, go to the jungle, and then yesterday we discussed about how such a person situates himself in the jungle, and the physical and the mental aspects of it were described in 11-12, and again in 13-14. So now, this verse will describe the perfection at one level. Yunjanevam sadatmanam
Yunjanevam sadatmanam
Yogi niyatamanasaha
Yogi niyatamanasaha
Shantim nirvana paramam
Shantim nirvana paramam
Matsamsthamati gacchati
Matsamsthamati gacchati
Yunjanevam sadatmanam. Yunjan means to be engaged. Evam in this way. This way is what was described in the previous verses. If one keeps oneself engaged in this way, sadatman, constantly, then what will happen? The yogi, with who is controlled, is manyatamana saha. The person will attain perfection. One level of perfection. Shantim. Attain shantim. Nirvana paramam. So the word nirvana, Krishna always uses with some qualifier. Earlier it was Brahma nirvana. Now it is Paramam Nirvan, Nirvana Paramam. So, one attains the supreme cessation of material existence. That means there is Nirvana at the material level, but there is a higher level of existence that is attained, Paramam. Supreme liberation. Mat Samstham Adigachati. So, Mat Samstham, under my shelter and my abode in my kingdom, Adigachati, one attains them. So, Matsamstham, the place where I am situated. So Prabhupada translated the kingdom of God. And he attains that by cessation of material existence. So now in the flow of the Gita, this is referring to Brahman realization. So Matsamstham will refer to the spiritual sky basically. In the spiritual sky, there is the Brahmajyoti, there are the Vaikuntha planets, there is Ayodhya, and there above that is Goloka. So, in the spiritual sky also, there is variety and some level of hierarchy also. So now, by fixing the mind on Krishna, as described in the previous verse, if the person develops pure devotion, then the person can go to the spiritual world to have eternal relationship with Krishna. Yukta Sita Matvara was described in the previous verse. Yukta, what was it? On the other hand, if one approaches Krishna as a object for meditation, not as the ultimate goal of meditation, then one will go to the spiritual sky. One may attain Brahmajyoti. So you remember we discussed that the yogis, by meditating on Paramatma, they can either go to Bhagavan if they understand that Paramatma is my eternal master, or they can go to Brahman if they think that I and Paramatma are ultimately one. So both are possible. So depending on what is the consciousness over here, what is the understanding, the conception of Krishna, when the meditation is happening, they can attain either destination. So now, let's look at these processes a little bit more, what were described in the previous verses. Before we do that, let's look at one or two more verses, then we'll come back, because then the topic will be connected with the verses also. So, yesterday we didn't get time to discuss a little bit about Yam, Niyam, Asam, Pranayam, so that we'll discuss when we come to these next two verses. So, next two verses, now again 15 is described one level of perfection. Now again 16 starts from sadhana. Okay, let us see what sadhana does one have to practice so that one can ultimately attain at highest level.
Natyashnatastu yogosti
Natyashnatastu yogosti
నైకాంతమనశ్నతః
నచాతి స్వప్నశీలస్య
జాగృతో నైవ చార్జునా నా అతి అశ్నతస్తు. అశ్నత ఇస్ టు ఈట్, వన్ హూ ఈట్స్ టూ మచ్. ఇఫ్ హి ఈట్స్ టూ మచ్ హి కెనాట్ బి యోగి. నైకాంతమనశ్నతః, ఇఫ్ హి డస్ నాట్ ఈట్ ఎట్ ఆల్, అనశ్నతః. నా చాతి స్వప్నశీలస్య, వన్ ఇఫ్ ఇట్ స్లీప్స్ టూ మచ్, డ్రీమ్స్ టూ మచ్. And jagruto chai naiva, even if he stays too much awake. So Krishna is talking about a balanced mode of living. So it's interesting that Krishna is talking about balance even for a yogi. So this can refer to the yogi when he is in the household order. It can also refer to the yogi when he is in the jungle. Even the yogi is in the jungle, the yogi has to practice yoga sadhana for a sustained period of time. Then he has to do it according to his adhikar. That means the yogi has to do austerities according to the level that he can practice in a sustained way. If the yogi does more austerities than what he is capable of doing, then even in the jungle his health can get spoiled and he can die prematurely. So regulation is required even at advanced levels, because ultimately the body is material. We see Srila Prabhupada, although he was so transcendently elevated in his consciousness, still he was quite regulated in that. Although he would sleep very less, but whatever he would sleep, he was regulated in that. Even his daytime, he was regulated. He would take meals at fixed time, he would have his massage, he would go for morning walks. So the body is a vehicle and the body has to be dealt with accordingly. So he's talking about yuktata, that we'll talk about next verse, but here he's talking about avoiding extremes. So that is required at all levels. So let's look at the next words, then we'll discuss this. Yuktahara viharasya
yuktacheshtasya karmasu
yuktaswapnavabodhasya
yogo
bhavati dukkha yuktahara viharasya. So the eating should be regulated. Now vihar is recreation, is entertainment. So these verses, what is the vihar for a yogi in the jungle? What is the entertainment? Krishna says that he should not give the entertainment also, but he should do it regulated. So what is the entertainment for him? We have the example of Bharat Maharaj, you know, whose vihar became a yukta. He was meditating, he saw a deer, and then he got attached to the deer, and he got completely distracted. So, for a yogi in the jungle to appreciate the scenery that is there in the jungle, the beauty of nature, that is not wrong. Yogi may go for walks apart from his meditation. It's not that the yogi is 24 hours absorbed in meditation. Meditation is sadhana, just as we do sadhana for 2 hours. Similarly, the yogi has prescribed time. As yogi advances more and more, yogi in the jungle will do more and more sadhana. But it's not that from the first day the yogi can completely absorb himself in samadhi and become oblivious to the external world. That happens after a long period of time. So there are sattvic recreations in the forest. Sattvic recreations means absorbing the beauty of nature and things like that. But even in them, he has to be regulated. Yukta cheshtasya karmasu. So whatever karma one does, whatever endeavoring one does, that has to be regulated. Yukta swapna avabodhasya, sleeping and dreaming, that also has to be regulated. So Srila Prabhupada applies this to us as devotees in our spiritual life. So regulation is what actually makes the mind free for thinking of higher things. If we are not regulated materially, then we are always caught up in thinking of material things. If my eating time is not fixed, then what happens is the mind is always dwelling, when should I take me. When the eating time is fixed, then that is not a problem. The sleeping time is fixed, then what happens is, to the extent our material activities are regulated, to that extent the mind doesn't get preoccupied in material activities too much. But if there is no regulation in our material life, then every single material activity that we have to do, we have to put a lot of thought at the material level in that. For a simple example, I'll start with before we go into the questions. You know, for us as brahmacharis, our dress is fixed. There's only one color dress. And practically, even if we have 3-4 dresses, all of them are identical practically. So, you know, materialistic people, right from the day when they start the day, they have maybe a wardrobe of 10-12 dresses. But then, which dress should I wear? This dress should I wear, but then this part doesn't match with that. And then I'm going for this and I'm going for that. So, what happens is that at the material level itself, the mind gets so caught up. So, it can start from dress. And say, if a person is staying in a house, then, you know, what should I cook today? Will I like this? Will I like that? Or will this person like this? Will this person like that? And the thought of cooking, you know, what to cook, that itself takes so much time and mental energy. So like that, every single activity, if it is not regulated, it can eat a party. But to the extent it is regulated, so for example, in Brahmacharya life, we have, okay, this is a fixed prasadam for everyone. Some days we like it, some days we don't like it. But whether we like it or don't like it, we take it at that time. And then the issue gets over there. So what happens is the mind doesn't get too caught up in material things when there is a regulation of our material activities. So for example, if we did not have a morning program structure, then you know, we say, okay, when should I chant? Should I chant in the morning? Should I chant in the afternoon? Maybe in the morning I can study better. And then I sit down to study, but then to study I should be fresh. So not fresh right now, let me take a little rest. And that little rest doesn't say little rest, because a lot of rest. So basically, imagine if we did not have any regulation in our life, at least in our sadhana, then our sadhana would become quite haywire. And especially those who are not having a regular morning program, often chanting 16 rounds itself becomes a big struggle. If they don't allocate a slot of time in the morning itself, then to the extent our activity, now chanting is not a material activity, chanting is a spiritual activity, but it also has to be incorporated within the regulation of our life. So if there is no regulation, then doing that activity itself takes a lot of mental energy, and then that mental energy keeps us caught at the material level. Therefore, regulation frees us for thinking of higher things. So that's how regulation is quite helpful from a spiritual point of view. So the word yukta can mean regulated. The word yukta can also mean connected. So we connect all these activities of Krishna. Our ahar we take prasad. Our karma that we do, we are doing karma for Krishna. Even we take rest, we pray to Krishna for taking rest. So it is Krishna's vehicle, that is their body. It needs some rest. So all these, when we connect them, that's interesting. Krishna says that when there is this regulation, then yoga bhavati dukkha. He says, then the process of yoga will have its effect. So, the process of yoga is meant to dukkha, to end our miseries, the misery of material existence. But when will the process of yoga bring about the end of the misery of material, end of material miseries? Only when there is regulation. If there is no regulation, then the yoga process does not have a platform to act on. See, our regulation creates a foundation of goodness, and then yoga takes us beyond goodness to transcendence. But if there is no foundation of goodness, certainly you can practice yoga, but the effect will not be so much. That's why Srila Prabhupada also talks about regulation, and of course Srila Prabhupada uses examples of, say, the Goswamis. They would not waste any time. Avyartha kalatvam. So Prabhupada writes, any time spent extra is considered to be a great waste of time. It is considered a great loss. Any unnecessary time spent sleeping is considered a great loss. What is the word? Great loss. If sleeping is kept to a minimum. And the ideal is Rupa Goswami. Of course, all Goswamis are there in this. And then Prabhupada gives a different meaning to this also. At our level again, he says that because he's regulated, there's no material misery for him. So if you are regulated, then to a large extent, at the material level, the miseries decrease. Because if our food is regulated, then the problems that come in the digestive system also become decreased. If our sleep is regulated, overall the health stays stable. So at that level also. And at a transcendental level, it also takes us beyond So, this is about regulation. Now let us look back at some of the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga and what Patanjali says about them. So now often we use this word Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Hatha Yoga interchangeably. But there's a difference. Ashtanga Yoga, the initial stages, the physical aspects, Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayama, called as Hatha Yoga. And the advanced aspects, where one is turning inwards, Pratyaha, Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi, they are called as Dhyana Yoga. Now sometimes Hatha Yoga may be used for all the eight processes, and Dhyana Yoga may also be used to describe the eight limbs. But this is technically the understanding. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a book called Prema Pradeep, in which he describes the discussion between a yogi, a Vaishnav yogi, and a Vaishnava, along with their various things. It's a very interesting book. And there he describes how a Vaishnava may also practice yoga, but that yoga is not what will give higher taste. The yoga may lead to some basic level of control of the mind, which can lead to the practice, which can enable one to practice chanting better. But it is not essential. And it can make one dependent on something other than Krishna, on the yoga sadhana. How I control my senses? By my yoga. So he says that it is okay. It is harmonizable with bhakti. Practice of yoga is harmonizable with bhakti. But it is not essential to bhakti. That's what he talks about over there. So now, of course, there is, presently, the fad is there that yoga is practiced widely for health. So I'll come to that. What does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say in Prema Pradeep? Can anyone repeat? What is the relationship between yoga and bhakti? Yoga is harmonizable with, but not essential to bhakti. So, here there is this, what is that? There is Yogi Raj Babaji, and there is Vamshidas Babaji, and there is Siddha. There are many Babajis over there who are having this conversation. So this, I'm going to collect the exact names, but what this Yogi Vaishnava thinks that actually practicing yoga is very good. But then when he has an elaborate discussion, then he understands that actually yoga can actually make one's heart hard, because one starts feeling that one is not dependent on Krishna. It's because I'm practicing yoga, my mind is calm. And because my mind is calm, I can chant very nicely. So then what happens is calling out to Krishna, the dependence on Krishna may decrease. Of course, the underlying principle is anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vachana. So we can use, sometimes if our mind feels very disturbed by the chanting, we might just pause and take a few deep breaths and calm ourselves down, and then again start chanting. That is fine. It's a bodily mechanism which we can tap. But ultimately we know it's not that by our slowing of our breathing we will be able to catch Krishna through the holy name. It is Krishna's mercy which will enable us to catch. To connect with Krishna, not catch Krishna. So now, in the stage of yoga, Patanjali described that the mind goes through these five stages. We'll come to this maybe when we come to that verse. Let's look at this first. Yama and Niyama. So Yama has five limbs. Ahimsa, Satyamasteya, Brahmacharyam, Aparigraha. There are five limbs of Yama. So these are do's. So these are don'ts and these are do's. Yama means don'ts and Niyama means do's. Shauch, Santosha, Tapa, Swadhyaya, Ishwara, Parinam. So let's look at these. So what is being described over here is, what Patanjali says, that every one of these will give its fruits. So now Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. Yama means don'ts, Niyama means do's. So if we don't commit violence, then what will happen? Others will give up their enmity to us. He says this is the fruit of following each of these limbs. So when we become non-violent, then others stop becoming violent towards us. Then when one starts practicing satyatva, and that satyam, then what happens? One's words become satyam. The extent I speak the truth, then eventually divine power gets infused, and then whatever I speak becomes the truth. Brahmaji tells Narada Muni that by the grace of the Supreme Lord, the instruction that I am speaking will come true. Sri Sandipani Muni gives Krishna the blessing after the education that whatever you speak will come true. Asteya. So when one stops stealing, then the result of that is that true wealth will come to that person. Inner enrichment, ultimate wealth will come to that. So one is asteya means not stealing. Steya is to steal. Sasteena evachi. You remember in the third chapter, the person is called as a thief. So asteya means to not steal. So when a person doesn't steal others' wealth, then the true inner wealth comes to him. And the fruit of brahmacharya is, interestingly, is power. So what is that power? That is the power of concentration, that is the power of memory, that is vichara shakti, that is dharana shakti, that is smriti shakti. So vichara shakti is the power of analysis. Dharana shakti is the power of assimilation. Smriti shakti is the power of recollection. So, all these we get by brahmacharya. So basically it talks essentially about intellectual power. And then aparigraha, when one stops being possessive, then what is the result of that? The result is that one gets insight. Aparigraha means not, see the difference in asteya means I don't steal what is belong to others. Aparigraha means I don't try to hold on even to what is mine. I am not attached to what I have. Aparigraha. So when one doesn't hold on to material possession, then what happens? The mind becomes free from thought of material possessions. And when the mind is free from the thought of material possessions, then higher wisdom can rise in the mind. And what is the higher wisdom that rises? Start understanding actually how I am suffering my own karmic misdeeds, consequences right now. And one also starts clearly seeing that whatever I am doing right now will also have its consequences in the future. Therefore, let me be careful. Let me be careful. So in this way, he described that each of these limbs will have its fruits. So, if we look at this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when we are discussing 11, 12 verses, Krishna uses the word aparigraha over there. If you remember, he is brahmachari vratistita. So, the Bhagavad Gita is not giving a systematic description of any particular path. Because Arjuna knows all the paths. Arjuna knows Karma Yoga, Arjuna knows Dhyana Yoga, Arjuna knows Bhakti Yoga. Even the Bhagavad Gita will not give an elaborate systematic description of Bhakti Yoga also. For example, the Bhagavad Gita doesn't contain the description of the nine limbs of Bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtana, Vishnu. Because it is not that Arjuna doesn't know these processes. What Arjuna doesn't know is which process should I follow right now? And what are the ultimate consequences, destination of each of these processes? That is what Arjuna is confused about. So that's why Krishna's description of the process of Ashtanga Yoga is not these are the five limbs of Yama, these are five limbs of Niyama. Krishna is not going that way. Krishna is giving a sort of assorted description where he is focusing on the broad principles. So Patanjali Yoga Sutra is the standard book for talking about yoga, and Patanjali himself, according to some sources, is considered to be a Vaishnava. Although in Yoga Sutra is a very small book, just 300-350 verses are there in it, and in that he also assumes that there is an Ishvara, but who that Ishvara is, he doesn't talk about that. But there are other references to some other works that Patanjali has written, which seem to quite clearly demonstrate that Patanjali was a Vaishnava. But in the Yoga Sutra itself, there is no description of the stage of perfection very explicitly. So, we'll talk about this a little bit more. So, in the fruits of Yama, Niyama is what one should do. Shauch, Santosho, Tapaswadhyaya, Ishwar, Pranidhana. There are the five do's. Shauch, one should say clean. So, what will happen when one has to stay clean? Actually, the repeated emphasis on cleanliness. For example, when we respond to nature, we take a bath. So, mother seems to feel shocked. You take a bath every time. But what happens by this repeated insistence on cleanliness? One starts realizing, how unclean this body is. And one becomes detached from the body. So Shaucha brings about detachment. And one starts realizing, okay, my body is so unclean, other people's body is also so unclean. So what is there to be attracted to in other bodies? Santosha. So it's interesting, if one is satisfied with what one has, then one can turn inwards, not Krishna, if Patanjali explains, that then one can turn inwards and experience Paramasukha, the highest happiness. Because if one is not satisfied materially, then one's consciousness, okay, I'll get this. So when we are caught on the material level, we can't go inwards to the spiritual level. Tapa is austerity. So what happens by our performance of austerity? Then the impurities get burned. The Bhagavatam says that just as gold, when it is put in fire, gets purified, and all the impurities within it go away. Similarly, by the practice of tapa, all the impurities go away. And the perfection of the body and the senses arises. What is that perfection? Focus on spirituality. And swadhyaya is study. Now, what does swadhyaya do? It brings about a connection with God. So, we start understanding how beyond whatever is the phenomena that I see in this world, there is the ultimate noumena, there is the ultimate supreme reality, there is God. And that is the philosophy, swadhyaya enables us to connect with that. And interestingly, the last limb of Ashtanga Yoga is Samadhi. And Patanjali says that just by one of the limbs, one of the sublimbs of one of the limbs here is Niyam, the sublimb is Ishwara Pranidhan. He says, by Ishwara Pranidhan, one will attain Samadhi. Pranidhan means to surrender. So, by surrender to Ishwara, one will attain Samadhi. So, in that sense, bhakti is there in yoga. Now, is bhakti the ultimate goal of yoga? That will depend on the previous conceptions of the person. So, Patanjali doesn't go too much in the description of Ishwara. He doesn't go too much in the description of the abode of Ishwara or anything like that. He focuses primarily on the process. So, therefore, what has happened in modern times is that even from the Ashtanga Yoga process, primarily the physical aspects have been taken, and they have been used as health tools, which is okay in its own way, but many people mistake that this itself is spiritual, and then it becomes an error. So now let's look at some of the previous verses, then we'll come to this stage. Next verse rather.
Yada vinyatam chittam,
yada vinyatam chittam,
atmanyeva vatishthate,
atmanyeva vatishthate,
nispruhas sarva kamebhyo,
yukta ityuchyate tada.
So, this is the second time in this chapter itself Krishna is sort of defining yukta. Earlier in 6.7 he described jnana vigyan tuttatma putastho vishtendiya yukta itte uchyate yogi. Such a yogi is yukta. Now it is yukta itte uchyate tada. So when is yukta? Yada vinyatam chittam chittada. Consciousness is fixed. It's regulated. And how is it regulated? Inward. Atmanyeva vatishtute. Nispruha sarvakamebhyo. One is free from all desire. So this is describing the stage of pratyahar. So one has to be regulated by managing yam, niyam, asana, pranayama. Pratyahar means one shuts out the external world, goes inwards. And the person is yukta. Now Krishna will give an example to illustrate this stage in the next verse. So Prabhupada talks about Savai Manaha Krishna Padaravindam. Second time he is quoting the same set of verses in the same book. He quoted this earlier in 2.61 purport. Matpara, that how Ambarish Maharaj fixed all the senses of Krishna. So instead of a devotee, instead of withdrawing the senses inwards, he focuses the senses outwards on Krishna primarily. That is also one way of making spiritual advancement.
Yathadipo nivatastho.
Mengate sopama smrita.
Yogino yat chittasya.
Yunjato yoga matmanaha.
Yatha dipo nivatastho. Nivata. Vata means, we have kapha vata. Vata means wind or air. So, deepa is a lamp. So in a place that is windless, nivadastu. So what will happen when there is no wind? Deepa will stay steady. Like that. Na ingate. It doesn't waver. Sa upama. This is the upama. This is the analogy Krishna is saying. For what? Smita. It is given by the past. For what? Yogino yachittasya. Pinjuto yogamatmanaha. So what is the wind? The wind is material desires. So when there are no material desires, then the mind will become fixed. So Krishna is telling over here that he's giving the stage as well as the condition for the state. Next verse describes in detail the principle of meditation. So what is he saying over here? Chitta. We'll discuss a little bit more about chitta in a few minutes. Chitta is like a flame. Then material desires are like the wind. Steady focus of chitta on atma. That is like the steady flame. Basically, Krishna is describing through a upama how we need to focus ourselves. So we will also see that when we are trying to chant Hare Krishna, at that time, if we are disturbed by material desires, and the holy name is there, the lips are there, the mind, we are here, but then the mind is just going everywhere in the universe, especially wherever the sense objects that we are attracted to are there. This way the mind gets distracted. But the whole process of pratyahar is for the purpose of bringing out nivadastho. When you shut out the sense objects, then what happens is there is no vat, there is no material desire that can come in. And then one can focus. Now is a long set of verses in which Krishna will describe the state of perfection. Yatro paramate chittam.
Yatro paramate chittam.
Niruddham yoga sevaya.
Niruddham yoga sevaya.
Yatra chaivatmanatmanam.
Yatra chaivatmanatmanam.
Pashyanatmani tushyati.
Pashyanatmani tushyati.
Sukhamatyantikam yatta.
Sukhamatyantikam yatta.
Buddhi grayam atindriyam.
Buddhi grayam atindriyam.
Vetti yatra na chaivayam.
Vetti yatra na chaivayam.
Titaschalati tattvataha.
Titaschalati tattvataha.
Yam labdhva cha param labham.
Yam labdhva cha param labham.
Manyate nadhikam tataha.
Manyate nadhikam tataha.
Yasmin sthito na dukkhena.
Yasmin sthito na dukkhena.
Guruna api vichalyate.
Guruna api vichalyate.
Tam vidya dukkha sanyogam.
Tam vidya dukkha sanyogam.
Vyogam yoga sangitam.
Vyogam yoga sangitam.
So this is again 3.5 verses which the Prabhupada cuts over here, because the thought is ending over here. It's a very beautiful ending. Tam vidya. Know this, Arjuna, to be dukkha sanyoga vyogam. The contact with misery ends. Dukkha sanyoga is contact with misery. Vyoga is separation. So yoga sangitam. So what is yoga, Arjuna? When your contact with misery ends, know that to be yoga. So here Krishna is defining yoga in terms of its perfection. That when the contact with misery ends, that stage is called as yoga. And what are the characteristics of that? Yatra uparamate chittam. Uparamate means cessation. Like we have viram. Viram means full stop. Raman is action. It is delight. Yatra uparamate. Uparamate means no more action. So when the chittam, so what becomes steady is not just the body. What becomes inactive is not just the body, but is the chitta, the consciousness. Uparmate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. by the practice of yoga, the consciousness attains the stage called niruddha. So let us look at this stage. So, the five stages of yoga that are talked about, five stages in mind control, are talked about in Patanjali Yoga Sutra. So Krishna is talking about niruddha, stage of the fifth, the most evolved stage over here. So, moodha is the lowest stage. That is the stage which is a person, which a person is in when is in the mode of ignorance. Moodha means deluded, as the word says. When a person is sleepy, lazy, dull, that is moodha stage. It is expected to move on. Then kshipta. Kshipta is when a person is agitated. So, that is in the mode of passion. So, when a person is in stress or is in mania, this, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do that, how will I manage everything? Kshipta. And agitated. Or sometimes people get maniac, hyperactive. Yes. So, there is cricket mania, there is this mania, that mania. So, kshipta. Then beyond that, when one comes to vikshipta, vikshipta is the beginning of goodness. Patanjali says that moodha and kshipta stages are useless for the practice of yoga. If the mind is in moodha and kshipta, there is no use in trying yoga also. It is not going to be successful. Because one cannot connect, because one is so either so passive or so hyperactive at the material level that one can't do anything. So vikshipta means actually one is distracted. In fact, vikshepa, if you remember in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of the obstacles in chanting, is vikshepa is one of the is distraction. That's true, but he's saying that is also one stage which is good. The very fact that there is distraction means there is an effort for attention. For example, if I say that, hey, the sound is distracting us. And that means we are trying to concentrate, but the sound is distracting us. On the other hand, if somebody likes that sound, so instead of this monotonous machine sound, if there is some sweet kirtan going on, then that is not, if that's what you want to concentrate, I want to hear that. Then when I want to hear something, then I say that I'm attracted to it. I don't say I'm distracted by it. When I say distracted means I want to focus on something else. But something takes me away. So vikshipta. So at this stage, one is trying to concentrate, but one is not able to. So one is trying to hear a lecture in a noisy environment. Then what is happening? One has to concentrate. But then this distraction, that distraction. Then after that is ekagrata. Ekagrata means concentrated. So when one is concentrated, at that time, one has been able to put aside the distractions. Put aside the distraction. So the example of there is a serious student and he's studying gravely before the exams or revising my final moment. At that time, for the students, all of us have that experience that the whole world ceases to exist. Just enter into the studies. So absorb, ekagrata. And beyond that is niruddha. Niruddha means one is not just concentration also indicated there is some effort. But when there is control or complete focus and is in a flow. So it's like when a devotee is in a trance of love in samadhi at that time, it's not that it's an effort, the spontaneous connection. So there are, so now of course here niruddha means actually no activity at the material level. So there the consciousness is completely related to the spiritual level. And there is no activity at the material level. So, yatra uparamate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. So, when by the practice of yoga, one has attained the stage of niruddha. And what happens? Uparamate chittam. The chitta becomes inactive. So, you may remember that I talked about the difference between chit and chitta. Remember that? Yeah, I talked about it in the Ishopanishad course. So what is chit? Anyone remembers? Chit is? Chit is internal, innate feature of the soul. As a Sat-Chit-Ananda entity.
Sutta is contaminated consciousness. Expressed in the material realm. So that means that chit, correct. So is it a comment or a question or what?
I'm just asking, it's very fine. It is like understanding.
Okay. Yeah. Chit is a feature, as I said, of the Satchitananda. Let me explain this. Then I'll come to your specific point. So just like, you remember I talked earlier about a mental existence being compared to a virtual reality. Or a person watching a television. So when the person has an original consciousness, and he can look here, he can look there, he can look in different directions. But if he gets glued to a TV, so when he gets glued to the television, at that time his consciousness gets rooted in the television, and maybe through the television the cricket match is going on. So his consciousness is transported from here to say wherever a cricket match is going on, maybe in Australia or wherever, and his consciousness is rooted all the way over there. So he is here, but his consciousness is rooted over there like that. So if we consider this analogy, then the original consciousness of the person is like chit, C-I-T. But when the consciousness is rooted through matter to a different level of existence, a different realm, that is chitta. So the soul always has knowledge, soul always has consciousness. But where is it rooted? That's the issue. So in the pure stage, person is not watching the television. So he's in the reality, talking with other people, interacting with them. The television is there, but it doesn't matter to him. He's not absorbed in that. So like that, right now, the soul is here. The super soul is right next to us. But it's like a friend right next to us. But we are so absorbed in television that we don't even notice the friend's presence over there. So when the soul's consciousness gets rooted in matter, that consciousness that is rooted and almost like trapped in matter, that is called as chitta. So the soul's consciousness, which is originally there, is chitta. So now, when we talk about chitta, here yatra uparamate chittam. That means, one stops perceiving at the material level. That means, one no longer is watching the television. One is withdrawing the consciousness from the material level. So chitta becomes uparamate. It's a cessation of activity, not just at the physical level, but even at that mental level. And that doesn't mean that the person has become unconscious. But the person is conscious no longer at the material level. The consciousness is at the spiritual level. Yatra uparamate chittam. So when this happens, the person is said to experience higher realms of existence. What happens? So if a person is too caught up in watching the TV, he may not even know what kind of chair I'm sitting on, what posture I am in, how I am breathing. The person is not at all aware of anything. But when the person is no longer caught in the television, so he's shut off the television probably, then what happens? He becomes aware, oh, I'm sitting like this, I'm not very comfortable. Let me sit myself more relaxed. Similarly, yatra chaiva atman atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. So when there is niruddham, when there is stopping of activity and consciousness at the material level, mental activity at the material level, then one can perceive at the spiritual level. Yatra chaiva atmana atmanam. So Prabhupada explains, with the purified mind, with the pure consciousness over here, one sees, oh, one becomes aware. I'm atma. Chaiva atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. When one sees in this way, atmani tushyati. One becomes satisfied with himself. So here, in these verses, Krishna has not introduced himself. So he's not talking about bhakti, he's talking about Atman realization. So, Atma, of course, Atma can refer to Bhagavan also, and we'll look at that later.
But one perceives the spiritual realm. That's what we can say as a common denominator, clearly and ambiguously. And just perceiving oneself as a spiritual entity as Sachidananda also is Tushyati. And then what happens? Sukham Atyantikam Yatta. One experiences the ultimate happiness. Buddhi Grahayam Atindriyam. So how does one experience this happiness? Buddhi Grahayam. One experiences with one's intelligence. So here what is being referred to is that this experience is not with the senses. Atindriyam. It is beyond the indriya. It is beyond the senses. It is experienced with the buddhi. So in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, these 4 states of consciousness, which are the 4 states? Jagruti, Sushumna, Swapna, Samadhi. Now these are four states of consciousness. Earlier what we discussed was Chitta, Vikshipta, Mooda. They were 5 states in mind control. 5 states in which the mind can be. They are 2 different. What is the word for classification? Typologies. There are 2 different typologies. There are 2 different taxonomies. Different systems of classification with different focuses. So in this stage of from going from Moodha to Niruddha, the idea is a progressive increase of mastery over the mind. That is the focus in this taxonomy. Whereas in the taxonomy is a system of classification. In the taxonomy of Jagrata, Swapna, Sushupti and Samadhi, it is how much is the consciousness expressed elsewhere. You remember the diagram I had shown? When the consciousness is rooted at the material, gross material level, it is Jagruti. When it is rooted at the subtle material level, it is Swapna. When it is rooted, only it is withdrawn within itself, it is Sushupti. When it is redirected at the spiritual level, it is Samadhi. So this is basically how the consciousness is withdrawn or expressed. So when it is expressed, to the gross body and beyond, it is Jagruti. When it is expressed to the subtle body, it is Swapna. When withdrawn within itself, it is Shruti. When it is redirected to the spiritual realm, it is Turya or Samadhi. So this is the way the consciousness is expressed. So it's like, continuing the television example, so it's like a channel. Say there are channels which are going on the TV. So I switch to one channel, then I see one program. I switch to a second channel, I see a second program. So now what is happening? Actually, I am the same, and to some extent the TV is also the same. But the channel which is being connected is different. That's why the perception also changes. So like that, Jagruti is one channel. Swapna is another channel. So when I am in Jagruti, I perceive a particular level of reality. But then, when we sleep, the Paramatma is on the channel. Channel gets switched off, then suddenly, actually in all our dreams, we are there. You know, we don't think of ourselves as, okay, I may see myself as a prince, I may see myself as somebody else, whatever I may see myself. But I am I. I am I. Actually, to understand that I am not the body is very easy. Just go to sleep. Why? Because when I go to sleep, I experience so many emotions. I experience myself having so many emotions. But the body is not experiencing anything. Isn't it? So I am experiencing, but the body is not experiencing. Therefore, I am not the body. So, to understand that I am not the body, I just simply have to go to sleep. But to understand that I am the soul, I have to wake up and chant Hare Krishna. So, just understanding I am not the body is okay. That is not enough. But what am I then? If I am just sleeping and dreaming, oh, I may think I am a prince, I may think I am a this and that and that. I will never get a clear understanding of what I am. For that, I have to practice the spiritual process of sadhana. So, this is a different... So now here Krishna is talking about how uparamate chittam, the consciousness is withdrawn completely inwards. The consciousness is withdrawn inward, buddhi grahaya mati indriyam.
the whole thing is redirected towards spiritual realm. Pashyan Atmani Tushyati. So, once there is cessation of material consciousness, then there is redirection of the conscious energy towards the spiritual realm. And then there is joy at the spiritual realm that is experienced. So, in this, when this whole process is happening, when we are talking about those five levels of mind control, that is, even when a person is, say, on the channel of Jagruti, and even at that time, is the person distracted or is the person focused? So those are, in one sense, levels within mind, levels of mind control which are progressing. And when one comes to Ekagrita, then one is sort of focused on one object. So, okay, I am in Jagruti, but I am focused on one object. And then gradually that object becomes transcendental. Then one redirects one's consciousness towards a spiritual realm. I'll come to that a little later. Now, let's look at what is being said by Krishna here. Sukham atyantikam yattar buddhi grahaya matindri. So I was talking about buddhi grahaya. Why does he talk about buddhi grahaya, attained by buddhi? Because if the atma is here, the different channels are like the different outlets that are offered for the consciousness of the soul through which the soul perceives. So all the TV is one, TV screen is one. But when I switch the channel, I get connected to a different reality, different show on the TV. So similarly, the subtle body is the link between the gross body, soul and the gross body. So now on the subtle body, either the patterns from the gross body, from the gross level are displayed. For example, if I'm awake, and in the subtle body, in the mind, the patterns from the world are displayed. Okay. Or if I'm unconscious, if I'm asleep, then what is happening? From its own past memory, from its imagination, from its fanciful drives, some other pattern is displayed. So in one sense, the TV screen is like a subtle body. Now what will be played on it will be either the what is displayed on the gross body or what is played from the past program. So when it is played out from the gross level, then it is Jagruti stage. When it is played out from the past memory or some random running of the mind, then there is a Swapna stage. But essentially, so these are four states of consciousness, but they can also be called as four states of buddhi, because it is on buddhi that they are being played out. It is on the subtle body that they are being played out. So the Bhagavatam sometimes refers to the subtle body by one generic term. It may refer to the whole subtle body as manas. It sometimes refer to the whole subtle body as buddhi. If you see that way, the sukshma sharira or linga sharira, this word Bhagavatam doesn't use very often. Bhagavatam primarily uses the word mana or buddhi. So we have to look at the context to understand whether mana is referring to specifically the mind or it's referring to generally to the full subtle body. Sometimes it refers to like that. So the point here is that buddhi grahayam atindriyam. So it's interesting that among these four channels, samadhi is ultimately perception at the spiritual level. But samadhi can be attained even through perception using our senses. That means there are two kinds of samadhis. A samprajnyat samadhi and a samprajnyat samadhi. So if this is becoming too technical, I can go slower and I can revise also. But these are interesting concepts for us to understand how they correlate with bhakti. So Prabhupada talks about these two in his purport. So samprajnyat samadhi means the mind is focused. Or samprajnyat samadhi means the mind is stopped. The mind is stopped. So stop means stop at the material level. It's active at the spiritual level. But at the material level it's stop. And samprajnyat samadhi is the ekagrata state. Now ekagrata Krishna used the word in the earlier used. So ekagrata. Yada vinyatam chittam atmanyeva avastham. This question is no. Where the question is already got it? 10.11. Hmm? Traikagram manah kritva. Yada chitte. 13 data, but 10.13. 6.13 rather.
There are objects which can redirect us towards spirituality.
For example, there are deities,
there are scriptures, there are mantras. Although they are manifest in the material realm, they can redirect us towards the spiritual realm. They can redirect our consciousness towards the spiritual realm. So just like we will tell people, you don't have TV at your home. No, I want to have TV. Okay, then on TV you watch Atma TV, Atma program. You watch spiritual program on television. So like that, the idea is the consciousness is active, but the consciousness in the stage is focused on the spiritual stimuli. So now, within the Sampragyat Samadhi, when the mind is focused on a particular thing, there are two levels. There is Savitarka Samadhi and there is Savichara Samadhi. Savitarka means when there is an external object for focus. And Savichara means when there is an internal concept that one is using. So, in the traditional yogic hierarchy, the dependence on an external object is considered to be a lower level. If one's mind is more fixed, then one does not require external object. So, many traditional people feel that manasik chanting is higher than vachika chanting. And that is true in a particular way of analyzing. So, if the yoga principles are applied to bhakti, then it is true. But when we talk about chanting loudly, Haridas Thakur gives a different logic. He says that other people are benefited by the chanting also. So devotee is not so much concerned about his own deliverance. Devotee is also concerned about delivering others. So the important focus here is what? The principle remains the same. The principle is that we have to absorb ourselves in spiritual realm and we have to help others absorb themselves in spiritual realm. So Savitarka means when there is an external object for focus. That means it's like the person is watching the television, but he's walking only spiritual channels. So maybe the yogis, Dhru Maharaj was told that you meditate on, you make a deity. The Narada Muni gives elaborate description of the form of Krishna, very beautiful verses that are given. And then he says you make a deity like this and you chant on Bhagavad Vasudeva, practice yoga and meditate on that deity. And then as he was chanting, what happened? From that Savitarka Samadhi he went to Savichara Samadhi, he went inwards. And then inside he saw the form of Vishnu over there. And suddenly the form of Vishnu disappeared. And he got up. And looked out. He saw the Lord was there riding him. So the idea is, first there is an external object for focus. Then there is an internal concept that we focus on. So what does that mean? Sometimes you may close our eyes and you may let me recollect, how is Gopinath looking today? Okay, I will try to recollect. Now this recollection is mental, it is not spiritual. Because I am using my mind to, I can recollect maybe how some sports star looks also, how some movie star looks also. Similarly, I am trying to recollect how Krishna looks. So, this is mental, this is not spiritual. At a spiritual level, directly Krishna manifests himself. So, initially, okay, I have a picture of a deity externally. Afterwards, I conceive that deity internally. That is the focus for my meditation. But beyond that, my thoughts at the material level stop. And directly at the spiritual level, there is connection, perception, there is revelation. So that is Asamprakyat Samadhi. Asamprakyat Samadhi means there is no perception at the material level. And this is describing that level of consciousness. So we will continue discussing this tomorrow. This verse. And Krishna says that Sukham Atyantikam Yatta. Then we explain the greatest happiness which he explains through Buddhi Grahayam Ati Indriyam. It's experienced with the purified consciousness. So it's like Buddhi Grahayam means the channel is focused on the devotional stimuli, the spiritual stimuli. And gradually one doesn't need the external stimuli, one gets the internal stimuli by one's own conception. And beyond that, one doesn't even need an internal stimuli because there is internal revelation. We will discuss the later parts of this verse tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Krishna Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Jai Gaur Prema.